Welcome to the Voices of the West, hosted by Emil Franzi and dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
Hi there. Welcome to Voices of the West. We did a best of last week because I was down at the Empire Ranch Roundup, and I was down there with my good friend and today's co-host, Bunker DeFrance. Hello, Bunker. How you
doing?
Hello,
Emil. We had a wonderful time. It was a great shindig.
Yeah, it was. Hey, try this one for openers. We got some other stuff to talk about, too. We got that movie that was at the loft that we need to yak on. But 790-2040, listen up, audience. Those of you who went to the Roundup, give us a call so we can yak with you about your impression, because I think we did it better this year, even though the attendance was down a bit because we did it not so well the year before.
Yeah, it seemed to go way smoother this year to me. Of course, you know, you don't see the whole picture when you're down there because you're just a small part of it.
Well, you don't, and I never saw a whole bunch because I was standing over there up until 2013, up until the 2012. I didn't do 2013. Trying to be the announcer for the big arena, and fortunately, when I couldn't make it that one year, we got Joe Dreyfus to do it, and it's always nice having a real cowboy doing the arena instead of a guy who's pretty good at playing movie film scores. Okay, that part I can do well, and
they're both needed.
Yeah, but the point being, it gives me the opportunity I never had for about 5 years to walk around and look at all this different stuff and say, wait a minute, why is that over there or why is this over here? And we did some of that. And one of the things we did do is we moved the authors indoors.
That was a great idea.
Well, they're happier than a pig. And we only had about eight of them this year, but we had eight good ones. And they're all happy. They're all coming back. And I think the word will spread. And what we've got to do from our end is ask the authors to self-promote and in trade for it, we'll just let them come in. We're not making that much money on that deal anyway. The authors ought to be there to be a draw. We'd like to be able to tell you that you're going to be able to meet people who are down, you know, Doug Hawking and some of the other people that come in, Jan Clear, who are on this show and have written books, and you may have even bought their books. You'll have the opportunity to sit there and yak with them, and a whole bunch more people just like them and see a pretty good display of books you're not going to see anywhere else. So I think we need to do that.
Yeah, and you know, it's doubly to their benefit, especially if they have something new coming out. That way they can promote their new book while they're there. And the other thing, too, is most of them have a website of some sort.
To promote.
They, you know, it's a great way to let everybody know because, you know, I love writers. They're among my favorite people. And an opportunity to see somebody who I like and enjoy their writing and say I like it in person. It's
well,
great.
I forget about, and I knew she was there, but it is one of the ones that went right by me. But next week she'll be a guest on this show, is Cindy Hystick. Well, she's a freelance writer and I'm holding a card. Freelance writer and researcher, grassroots historian out of Douglas. Well, she's got all sorts of stuff. She does a little newsletter. She's got all kinds of historical research she has done. And she is going to be well worth having on the show to talk about a bunch of people, some of whom I've never heard of. And it's going to be worth the effort to get. And I just met her here at the Roundup. I said, how'd you do with the books? And she said, they all said one thing. It's so good to be in out of the wind.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing books, you've got stuff blowing around.
And, you know, she should be especially good, because for me, you know, it's like I love the Westerns, I love the Western stories, but it's the historical Westerns,
yes,
that really stay with you. There's been historical Westerns won Pulitzer Prizes. That tells you how good they are.
Oh, yeah. Now, we've got some, and we have a generation of damn good Western writers, both fiction and nonfiction. Western Writers of America is just one place they hang out.
Yeah.
And we've got, as I said, there are 172 published authors in the state of Arizona, and 114 of them live in Sonoyta.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Dave! Go for it. You're up.
Hi. One comment I've got on the Roundup is lately, every year, it's at the same day as the Cops and Rodders car show, which is one of the biggest ones with about 600 vehicles in it. on the same day, same time.
You know what we might, this is going to be on the table for a change. We put it away and didn't want to try it. And we're going to talk about it. Making the roundup a two-day event. Because we'd have to do, really, is maybe get the Arizona Rangers to hang around for a couple of days so nobody ripped anything off.
Right.
And covered some stuff up and let it go for one more day and then moved it out. Now, we don't get a Sunday cleanup day after, you know, it's got some other problems that would have to be worked out. But there is so much going on if you look at what's happening. And if you've been to a roundup, Dave.
Oh, of course.
You know what I'm talking about. You've got stuff, three things going on at once. You got two different cowboy conversations going on at the same time. Then you've got what's ever up on one stage, and then you got the stuff in the arena. Well, it's like a Bruegel painting, as I've used as an example, or better, Rawlinson's yeah. Portsmouth Point, because it's taken from the air, and it's a little easier to follow. But the point being, there's so much stuff going on at once, you can't take it all in 6 hours.
And, you know, the doubly thing about that making it good is because it does give you that option of having another day if you're busy. But one of our problems being that when you start selecting days, there's always a conflict.
There's always something.
So it's a matter of juggling. And
remember, you're competing. Remember, we're on the other side of the hill, so we're competing in Santa Cruz County. And we've got stuff in Cochise County, Sierra Vista area. Something's going on in Tombstone.
Almost every week.
So I think the best answer for that would probably be, and you got to figure out a little detail. Okay, you've paid to park. Now you want to come back. You don't want to pay again. Oh, whoops. We're going to have to make sure you get something put on your dashboard. That kind of thing. But I think it's workable. And I think we could end up with a two-day roundup. But we're going to discuss it, and we'll see.
I think you'd get a terrific outcome out of that because of just what you described. When I was there, I couldn't go see everything at one time.
Absolutely no way. And then I forgot to go back. And the other thing is, you're walking around, you want to buy something, but you don't want to tote it with you, particularly if it's anything bigger than a book or so. So you have to come back for it. And I missed some holder things that I was going to get for the wife because they had some Indian things on and I knew she'd like it. I didn't get back in time before the guy left. There's more than you need for you can't get it all in. And what it doesn't mean that if you only go there for 3 of the 6 hours, you're still not going to get to see half of it. It's got to be too much stuff going on at once.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Dave, you know, just so you don't feel like you've missed that much, I've been doing this for several years and I've seen probably less than, I'd say, a seventh of it, because I'm always busy. I never get over to the arenas.
Yeah, well, we have stuff we got to do, so yeah. There you go. But what, well, another thing I figured out was, you know, I'm a radio guy, right? Duh. Now, I really live up to my motto, which is I don't learn quick, but I learn good. Mm. And I came to a conclusion, you know what? You got the microphone. When you've got this whole crowd here, it's just breaking up because you just finished a round of, say, cowboy-mounted shooting. You go, hey, wait a minute, everybody. Maybe it'd be a really good idea if you went by the old adobe hay barn and noticed that we fixed it this year, and that only cost, what, about $300,000?
Yeah.
To have it done completely the way you had to do it. Because you remember, those cowboys didn't build anything to code.
No.
Inconsiderate people that they were. So we had to do it according to the Department of the Interior standards, and yada, boo, ba, da, da, wah, wah. But we got, hey, all the tapes off it, and you can walk into it now. And it's an adobe hay barn, and the only thing we can say about it is it's in Red River. And we'll think of something neat to do with that. I was almost going to put the authors in there, but I think it's better not to.
Yeah.
I think you can put they're better in the house. But there's stuff we can do, okay?
Hey, and one thing you could do is sell DVDs of those movies.
You know, that's not a bad shot if you can figure out how to get a wholesale on them.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out a way to sell posters from the movies that we sponsor at the Loft, and that's a good idea.
Well, yeah, the other way we do it is if I could, for example, I know I could take a – and the neat part about it is once those posters are in the computer over at Southern Arizona Management Group, you can go over and say, hey, guys, we need about 20 Monty Walshes, and then take them up and have Pam Marvin autograph them. And we'll sell them to you for $10 a piece. And they're beautifully done. They really are well-done posters.
And for $25, you get the DVD, too.
Yeah, we could throw that in. I got to figure out how to do the wholesale on those movies.
I think it would be really worthwhile to do that. I've had Red River in my DVD, in my DirecTV deal to record when it next comes on. It's been in there now for 3 years, and Red River hasn't come up on it.
Oh, come on. I've seen it go by what do you call it?
I don't have the Western Channel.
The Western Channel, Encore Western's channel has gone up a bunch of times.
I don't have that, but... You know, normally a lot of these things used to come up on regular channels, but
if this is one of the sad things, is because with everybody that's got all of the cable services, now it seems like there's more Westerns on the free TV because they've got all these sub channels on the regular channels, and Red River has been up a couple of times on 13.3, which is the CBS sub channel.
Yeah, see, and I don't know, but by DirecTV. Hasn't pulled it up yet.
Yeah. No.
But anyway, I think that'd be a great idea, and I think it'd be a good money maker too.
Good. You're probably correct. We could do something else, expanding what we sell down there, and expand because we did about $1,000 worth of stuff out of the gift shop this year. So that's good to know. Books, other things, and the authors are separate, and they're on their own on the side and just doing whatever they do. That's their biz. All right, Dave.
All right,
thank you so much. Appreciate the call. 790-2040. Anybody else has some Roundup experience, give us a call.
Yes.
Voices of the West will be right back. Welcome back to Voices of the West.
I know that's a great old Stephen Foster song, but I can never hear Doodah without thinking of Blazing Saddles. That is permanently in my mind.
Etched into your brain.
God, that was a funny one.
Seared into your brain.
Now, let me try this. I'm thinking, I've laid that one on Heller for the July 4th movie, and he goes... You know, that's one even Heller's afraid of. And why?
Well,
it was a great movie, and it parodied exactly what it should be parodying, which is racism.
Yeah. You know, there's a funny thing.
Same way that Huckleberry Finn does, and anybody that doesn't know that is too stupid to comment
exactly.
on anything. In fact, you ought to leave town.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's one of the interesting... That was really a landmark movie in its own way.
Oh, yeah.
But... If you chronicle the progression of Western movies since then, they went down. And there was something about that movie that I think busted the bubble on the Western myth for a lot of people, especially younger people.
Yeah, but you were getting a lot of that anyway. You were getting things like Soldier Blue and Dirty Little Billy and all those anti-Western Westerns, all of which bombed, didn't make any money, and all it did was run the rest of us. Yeah. You know, and I always make a combination between, and I've even written about it, operas, Italian, and soap, and Western, okay? And how what happened to the Western is about the same time happened to opera, where they decided they were going to make Rigoletto a bartender in New York City, and they were going to put Don Giovanni in a double-breasted suit, make him look like Harry Truman. And you say, why are they doing this crap? Nobody wants it. Well, it's because the guys who make the movies are like the guys who hang around the opera. They got nothing to do because nobody's come up with any new stuff they like. So what they're doing is they're screwing with the older formats and the older stuff and making a mess out of it, but they get paid for it.
Well, you know, there's an interesting analogy to that, too, is the old pulp Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
People forget that the most popular of the pulp Westerns was called ranch romances. And the funny thing was, this is the era when all of the really great Western writers were... These were guys that were coming out that had the experience, or they knew the people that had that actual experience. And they were geared towards a mixed audience, and a lot of the people buying them were the women because they were virile men doing virile things.
I don't know how quite to break this news to certain people at certain universities and all the rest of it, but I got a real surprise for you. There are still a lot of real women out there that prefer real men. Okay?
Yes.
You got that part, guys? So, hi.
Go out to the small towns.
Let me share this with you. It's probably not really going to make it with the right woman, and may make it with the wrong one, but that's another story.
Yeah.
The fact that the average cowgirl can probably outshoot you. By the way, speaking of girls that can outshoot you and women, check cowboy-mounted shooting.
Yeah.
The women are better at it than the guys for two reasons. Number one, women are naturally better shots. See, it's one of the differences between men and women. Do you bozos get that part? All you transgender jerks? Okay. Men and women are different. They're supposed to be different. If you can't figure that one out, take a cookie and go to your room. But what we have is there's things women are better at than men. One of them is shooting. Women are naturally better shots. Sorry. Rifles, they make great snipers. And they're better at cowboy-mounted shooting because not only are they're hand-eye quicker, but they're lighter. Yeah. Meaning, and Anita Kay, you probably know Anita, I've known her for years, and pointed out to me that she doesn't ride with a saddle.
Well, you know, it's another...
Well, guess what? She can out-turn any guy unless he's a midget. You know, it's kind of like, what is the average weight of a jockey?
That runs about 110.
About 120. Yeah, I was going to say 115 maybe.
Yeah, well, then you add weight.
They're usually Panamanian, okay?
You know, I worked at the track at Rio Doce.
Yeah, you got to balance them out.
And with the jockeys, most of them ran around 100, 110. Some of the older guys would be up a little higher. But they had a little on the saddle pads. They had a little
Did you ever notice how tall was the average Comanche warrior? About 5'4". Yeah. They could ride a horse. And a woman can ride a horse better than a guy, particularly if you're lighter and you're doing the kind of turns you have to do to cowboy-mounted shooting, weaving in and out to hit those balloons, okay?
Well, this is probably inappropriate, but it's like the old thing, you know, show me a cowboy who rides side saddle and I'll show you a gay ranchero.
Yes, okay.
That's probably inappropriate. So I apologize to anybody that was offended.
And I don't care. All right, Paul, you got a question about a Western.
Yeah, every time I hear you fellows talking about Western movies, I've got a very large collection of old movies. Since the rentals went out of business, I bought one of the stores. But
smart move.
A buddy of mine did that with Betamax, believe it or not. He got about 500 movies for like 50. I mean, more than that. He probably got about 5,000 of them, and he still got the player. What the heck?
Yeah, I've still got an old Beta movie a camera.
Oh, there you go!
Wow,
for my kids. But here's a question. I've asked other people about this. I'd like to know the connection between Will Penny and True Grit, because in Will Penny, that woman, her ex-husband who ran away and left them, was named Reuben, and her son was Horace. Then in True Grit, when John Wayne is talking to the girl about his background, he talks about his boy named Horace. And I'm just wondering if...
Hey, that's a hell of an observation, Paul.
That's interesting, yeah. And, you know, Horace was not that uncommon, because we forget Horace Greeley was a very prominent writer of that era.
Yeah, I mean, there are names that went out of style. You can almost date people by, like, Bertha. There's nobody's named Bertha anymore.
My grandmother,
well, Bertha
Messi.
Was a lot of Berthas around 1900. And then there were people named Elvis and Tuesday who were all born about 1962.
Yeah.
And then there were people, there aren't a lot of women anymore named Glinda, but there were some that were born from about 1939, 1940, 1941. Anyway... But you're pointing that Portis, the novelist who wrote True Grit, and give the Coen brothers credit for this one. That was the only movie I've seen a second version of besides Monty Walsh that was worth the trouble. Because what they did was they went back to the novel and ignored the John Wayne movie. And the novel written by Portis was fascinating because Portis, in the 1930s, worked for the telephone company in rural Arkansas, and his job was like a customer relations job. And he talked to all these people all the time. Well, he understood the dialect that you had in Arkansas 100 years ago. And that's the dialect that, that the original True Grit is based on. So you would have people named Horace, and then you move over to, I don't know that much about the original writing of Will Penny. I'd have to look it up.
But just the idea.
Hell of a good, by the way, Charlton Heston thought that was just about his best role.
Yeah, he did. And there's another thing about Will Penny, I can't pin it down right now, but the Will Penny character actually appeared in an earlier movie, but he was a very, very minor character. It's just one of those little things that floats in the back of your mind, you know, that it never really settles down, but you can't get rid of it.
That was a very atypical role for, you know, the guy who played Moses.
Yes.
Well, he seemed very, I liked him in the movie, except where he was getting serious with the woman, and it just didn't seem to jibe out right for me. All of a sudden, he went from a smelly cowhand to a Romeo lover, and I thought it fell apart at that point. But the fact that woman's husband was named Reuben and her son Horace was just
That's an interesting. One or the other, but not both, is sounding more like a coincidence. But I will tell you this. Let me roll that back up, Harry. Let me see the date. That was the exact date for Will Penny was 1967.
69, I think, was True Grit.
And Penny was filmed at Old Tucson.
Yeah. And
interesting that...
And True Grit, the book, actually predates the obvious filming date by a couple of years.
More than that, I think.
Yeah.
So it is possible that Greer, because I'm looking at who wrote Will Penny, had read the novel True Grit before he made the movie in 1967, even though the movie predated the movie, the True Grit movie. So he may have just lifted the name for whatever reason. I don't know.
Well, the Will Penny
name
is the second time it was used as a character in a Western movie. So, it is possible, you know.
Wonderful trivia observation. We'll put that over next to the question, the ultimate Western movie trivia question, and that's how many different guys have killed Jack Elam?
Oh, that's easy. It's who hasn't killed Jack Elam?
Yeah, I saw him die last night. And old Gunsmoke.
He's like, we're just counting the movies. We're not counting the TV sequences he got blown away in. All right, Paul, thank you very much. Good question. All right, let's grab a break.
Voices of the West will be right back. Welcome back to Voices of the West.
Theme to Deadwood.
I had a problem with some of the stuff in Deadwood. One thing I did not believe, and I thought was totally off base, was there was a bunch of people sitting around, and one of the generals, we were sitting there with the commanding officer, the general, and some sergeant walked in and started BSing with the general like they were both buddies.
Oh, no.
And I'm going, doesn't somebody know that no army in the world will the sergeant, I don't care if it's his real brother, is going to talk to a general like that, and no general is going to allow him to.
Not unless he wanted to be a private
the next day.
Yeah.
Like on the spot. In the
yard house.
Right. So anyway, that was my problem with Deadwood, that whoever was doing it obviously had no sense of reality when they get that part. And if you don't have a sense of reality in anything that obvious, the rest of your stuff might be crap too, regardless of how good some of your actors are. And you had the guy who played in, what's his name? He had justified for five seasons.
Tim Oliphant.
He could retire now, okay? Between those two.
Timothy Oliphant.
He's got enough flowing in. By the way, his dad is a prof at the University of Arizona. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
I
don't know. Yeah, there's a certain ice cream store over on Campbell, Santa Barbara, that he comes into all the time.
Well, how about that?
Yeah, so I found out.
The old traditional one that's been there forever?
The one that's...
In the little shopping thing?
Yeah, the one that's Campbell's next, right down from that Vietnamese restaurant. Yeah.
I know the name, but I can't think of it.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to bring this up. Ofa, I saw the book you donated.
Uh-huh.
I had him on his show about 8 years ago.
Oh.
Is he still around?
No, he passed away. He was a great guy.
Well, he must have been about 90 when he went, because he was close to that when I had him on.
I think he was like 89 or something. Yeah. He's right real close to 90.
Well, they were twins.
Yeah.
Ofa Probasco, and he tells story. It was telling stories about Tucson. God, you know how far back that was?
When the West Side was West.
Well, it'd be about 85 years ago.
Yeah.
I remember it saying in 1930, he had been about 8 years old. Maybe 9 years old. Yeah, just about.
Yeah.
Riding a horse in a town, ride the horse up and down Congress Street, okay? Check to see which movie was playing at which one, because there was a half a dozen theaters then. Go park the horse at the livery stable for a nickel and go see the movie.
Well,
then ride the horse home.
When you're going out to old Tucson through the regular route to Ajo, the family had a little place out there for years when it was one of their first places in town. And they raised hogs and
They were out at about Ajo and
Kenny though, on this side of the mountain.
Yeah, on this side of Kenny, it would have been about Ajo and 12th or something like that.
Yeah.
Not much more than that. It doesn't look like that much now because you can drive it in 5 minutes, but try walking it sometime or even riding a horse.
Yeah.
It'll take you a little longer. But they used to go, but one of his great little stories, by the way, that book was terribly edited, in case you hadn't noticed.
Yeah. Well, it was self-published.
Yeah. It was self, but you can still get
it. I still have a copy of it. I have a signed copy that I kept.
Well, I saw that. I have a signed copy of that, too, and I remember bringing him in. And then he had a girlfriend who was about his age.
Wow.
What was her name?
I don't know.
She was very interesting because we had her on here, and Tom and I were interviewing her, and we said something about Tom raised a good question for her, and it was, okay, Chuck Boden says the trouble with this part of the United States is ever since they invented automobile air conditioning, it's gone to hell and it's been taken over by all the candy asses.
I think that's a very valid observation.
And he said, what do you think about how things have gone around here? And she said, oh, hell, honey, we didn't even have running water until about 1966.
Yeah, they didn't have electricity. They had outdoor plumbing, the whole nine yards.
So there's a lot of folks living during at least your and my lifespan. People need to appreciate we were closer to the 19th century than we thought, because a lot of people lived through it, were still around when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
Would that I'd taken notes
and
asked more and paid more attention to what people were saying.
Well, I knew him for quite a while because, he was a member of the Western Music Association when they were here the first time, and then we morphed into the Tucson Cowboy Music Roundup and then into the Arizona Cowboy Symposium down at Sonoyta. And he was a member all through that time, and we were always working down at the at the events and coming to all the meetings. We used to have potlucks and jam sessions. And I got to know him really well, and he's just a fascinating storyteller.
All right, now speaking of fascinating stories, I looked at this one and went, get out of here. But you didn't. You went to it, said it was pretty good. Bone Tomahawk. Is that still playing?
It's still playing. It'll be there through at least, I'd say, probably Thursday or Friday whenever they change.
At the Loft. Listen up, gang.
And I'll tell you, it was the same thing. I looked at that, and I thought, oh, boy, another Cowboys and Aliens, but it wasn't. And it was
a proper Western, a proper horror movie, and by combining the two becomes something else entirely and proves largely enjoyable for it. From Oliver Littleton playlist. Okay. A well-made, intriguing Western horror mashup, terrifically acted, especially by Richard Jenkins and Kurt Russell. Now, we all know Kurt Russell as one of the seven or eight principal guys who ever played Wyatt Earp.
Yeah.
I believe the movie was Tombstone.
Yeah, it was. Made right here in Arizona, in Tucson.
Kurt Russell stars in this thrilling, character-driven horror western. Now get this, guys. It's going to be a turnoff until you hear the rest. About a group of men who set out to restore a local woman and a young deputy who have fallen prey to a tribe of savage cannibals. Late one night in the Wild West town of Bright Hope, Arthur O'Dwyer, Patrick Wilson's life is turned upside down when his wife is kidnapped. A disparate vigilante posse is quickly ascended, headed up by the town sheriff, Franklin Hunt, which is Russell, who at least knows how to play a lawman, having once been Wyatt Earp.
Yeah.
And together they venture off in pursuit of Arthur's wife and her abductors. Unfortunately for our intrepid heroes, they have no idea just who, or more to the point, what, is waiting for them when they reach their fateful destination. Equal parts searchers and the hills have eyes. This gloriously imaginative genre hybrid is an original imaginative beast, filled with enough surprises to satisfy even the most jaded of horror hounds and Western fans, which is us. An impressively assured directorial debut of writer-musician S. Greg Zahler, Bone Tomahawk is a visual feast that boasts great performances from its all-star cast, which also includes Matthew Fox and Richard Jenkins, not to mention a host of cameos from genre veterans like Sid Haig and Sean Young. Find out how the West was really won in this brutally entertaining thriller that has a real bite. Okay, gang, it's 132 minutes, not rated, and it's at the Loft. Anybody, 790-2040, before Bunker gives you his review, if there's anybody else out there who has an opinion who happened to drop in and see this, give us a call.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that really pleased me about it was that, you see, a lot of times when you do this cross-genre stuff,
it sucks.
It sucks. It gets real silly. They did this very respectfully. In fact, it's, you know, the cannibal aspect, you know, people think, well, it's you know, and horror aspect, it's like a turnoff, but it's not, the story isn't told as a horror movie.
Did they give you any kind of geographic location other than the West?
Well, it's in a very outback area, which could be Wyoming, Colorado, Montana, northern Arizona, from the landscape.
New Mexico.
You're thinking,
Utah.
But
Eastern Oregon.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, it's that allegorical mythical West.
Okay.
That John Ford loved, and one of the neat things about it though is that if you go in thinking it's a horror movie, it's not. It just has that aspect, and the fact that the Indians are cannibals, people forget that on the East Coast, on the Gulf Coast of Texas, there was a tribe of cannibals that lived there in the early days when the first Spaniards came there. They eradicated them because they didn't like the idea of being eaten.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, you know, so
that would follow.
So, you know,
yes.
So it's not that far-fetched.
Seems rational.
It's not that far-fetched, you know. And also, what you've got here is a tribe of Indians.
What was the great one? There was one really kind of strange movie, but I liked it, with Tom Berenger, where he gets lost in the countryside somehow with some lady professor and runs into a bunch of totally unreconstructed Cheyenne from 100 years ago. Oh. And they're out there in the boonies somewhere, and they're still there. And you go, yeah, sure. But they made it almost believable.
Well, do you
remember that one?
Do you remember what? Yeah, kind of. But do you remember Valley of the Ganges with Guy Madison?
Yes.
That was not a bad, and it was kind of a contemporary Western, you know, and that was not a bad little Western. I mean, yeah, you have the plausibility, but the one thing about Bone Tomahawk is that it is plausible. That, you know, these Indians are.
There it is, Last of the Dogmen, 1995.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Who else is in that?
Montana.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be. Hang on a minute, I'm looking for the cast.
Okay. Well, while we're looking, yeah. One of the things about this is that this lost tribe is the remnants.
Barbara Hershey plays the female.
Oh, she does a good Indian.
She doesn't. She was playing a gringa.
Yeah, and she is. I think she's Cherokee or Choctaw.
Mm.
She actually is Indian.
I'm trying to figure out. Yeah, that may have been part of the gig. I don't remember exactly.
But you know, these Indians are, in fact, they're. Somebody refers to them as troglodytes, and everybody scratches their head because they don't know what the heck a troglodyte is.
Right.
But in a way, it's very accurate because they're almost prehistoric, and these are just the last very surviving remnants. And they've gone further back in the hills. And I'll tell you what, they are truly scary. And there's not the amazing thing is you look at a movie like this and you think, oh, I'm going to see a lot of implausible stuff. And the one thing in there, which you first get it, is they have like a bone implant in their throat. Mm. And, you know, you think, well, that's not implausible, but these are fun. They're very primitive. And the other thing is, this is the kind of things that native people would do, ritualistic.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
And they would use that part of their communicating because it could carry for a long ways.
I would buy that. All right. So far, so good. We may go see this yet.
Yeah.
I didn't have time, but I got time next week. Lauren, you're back. Thank you.
I'll make it really brief, Emil. Thank you. The vein or topic or this genre of film is very intriguing. And I mentioned to you off the air earlier, maybe a year ago, don't lose track of the movie called Into the Badlands. It's the same. That's pretty amazing. It's a little surreal. It starts out as a bona fide spaghetti western looking format or setting. It's got Bruce Dern, Mariel Hemingway, Dylan McDermott, and of all people, Helen Hunt.
That's about 20 years ago, isn't it?
Something like that. I'm looking. I can't read without a magnifying
glass. Oh, hang on.
Glass.
1991, because we got this magic thing called a computer here, and Harry in the other room take care of us.
Got magic fingers.
Based on some previous titles, The Streets of Laredo.
Bruce Dern, Muriel Hemingway. Yeah, okay.
I remember that now. I didn't see it, but I remember when it was out. Yeah.
I would recommend it.
Yeah, but the important question is Jackie Lim in it, and who kills him?
Well, unfortunately, he's not, but there's some pretty bizarre characters.
After Jack Elam, it's Bruce Dern.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably about right. I'm trying to think of who gets
not as many movies, but he's probably killed almost in every one.
Bruce played a bounty hunter, and it gets weird. There's wolves sneaking up on the windows, and it just gets surreal, and it's a little spooky, to be honest.
Yeah.
If a movie's spooky and supposed to be spooky, then it's spooky. Hey, good for it. You know, considering some of the crap that's coming out of there these days, I'll take it.
And you know, this is the interesting thing is now with The Hateful Eight coming out and this coming out just a little about a month, 2 months before it, you know, Kirk Russell and both of them, it's like the comparison now. It's something to compare.
I hate to tell you this, but he's kind of getting up there. He's pushing us.
Well, he's 70.
Well, see?
Yeah.
Yeah, how about that?
I doubled him on The Quest.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
He's a nice guy. He gave me his Bulls T-shirt. He tried out for the Bulls as a pitcher and was with him for a short while, and then the arm went like it does with so many.
My brother having been one, we can explain it to you. All right. Thank you, Lauren. We're going to grab a break. We'll be back for the last 10 minutes. 790-2040. Come yak with us about anything. If you happen to go to the roundup, give us a report.
Who is the tall, dark stranger there? Maverick is the name. Riding the trail to who knows where. Luck is his companion. Gambling is his game.
Voices of the West will be right back. Welcome back to Voices of the West.
Okay, gang, we got about 8 minutes. I haven't paid that much attention because I watched it go by and said, put me down for two tickets at, 50, 60 bucks a piece. But it looks like you're going to get 50 or 60 bucks worth of it because the Empire Ranch's next gig is January 30th. What do you know? I don't know.
Well, it'll be out at the Savoy House out at Trail Dust Town. And it's going to be kind of an old west gambling night. You'll have the Fargo tables and the poker tables and all that. There'll be hors d'oeuvres. There'll be dance hall girls. There's going to be some entertainment. I'm not sure exactly. I don't think we got it all lined up just yet. But it should be a really fun night. And You know, it's also, this is what we've done is we've opened it up from not just the people that are in love with Westerns, but for the steampunk community, because, you know, like Wild Wild West with Will Smith and stuff like that, and the series with Conrad, it's kind of a Western genre unto itself. And so we're hoping that we can kind of bring some of those folks in and really have a fun time.
Well, it looks like a fun time. I know we're going to be there. Get dinner's part of that. And I don't think, do we have any drink tickets? Shouldn't ask. Never mind. I always bring a flask anyway. You never know.
Yeah.
Because they always have cheap.
Well, you can always go
and
across.
I don't bring a flask because I'm too cheap. I bring a flask because I go to these things and I'm paying, I ask how much is a drink? Oh, they're $10. Okay, no big deal. Why don't you make money off it? And I look back and I see Jim Beam and I go, no, I don't pay $10 for Jim Beam. I'll pay $12 for a 12-year-old scotch, and you'll make money on me. Yeah. But you got to understand, I'm not going to sit there and drink rot gut. At my age. I don't have to drink rot gut anymore. Trust me, I drank enough.
You drink the good stuff. And, you know, not only that, but, if you know, there's nothing to stop you from walking the boardwalk over to the Savoy and having a bellying up to the bar and then coming back.
And having a real one. You betcha. So there. But basically, a flask with a little Jameson's in it.
A little silver flask.
Usually take care of me. Right? When it says CSA on it, that's just to be...
Like Doc Holliday.
I'm politically incorrect.
Like Doc Holliday and Tombstone there.
Mine have cross swords, cross cannon.
Well, you would.
Yeah, of course.
Well, you would.
Pirate of the Desert.
Pirates of the Desert. Hey, that may be the next genre combination.
Hey,
Western pirate movie set at Galveston.
We call ourselves the Pirates of the Pantano.
Oh, wait a minute. Well, I think we've already done that. Sterling, wasn't his name Lafitte?
Yes.
And the Sterling Hayden thing where he was a whaler that comes into the Western.
Oh, the one where he's carrying
the harpoon.
We finally gets the guy with the harpoon gun at the end. Yeah, that's a great movie.
It is a good little movie.
Yeah, yeah. I enjoyed it. I remember seeing that because I saw most of these first
Stranger
run,
in Town. No, that wasn't the name of it. What was the name of that?
Sterling Hayden. Yeah. Pump it in. Let's see what we get.
Yeah, call us.
790-2040. The one where Sterling carries a harpoon. Let's see. Let's see if we can figure that one out. It'll have to have the right title. By the way, when did he croak?
86.
God, he's been gone that long. 1916 to 19. We're the same year as Glenn Ford, but died 20 years quicker.
Yeah.
Okay, hit. Go to Westerns. There you go. You should be in about 42 of them. No, 31. See it up in the left-hand corner? There you go. All right. Wagon Train, Johnny. We're working on it.
He did a good Alamo one, too. Man from the Alamo. No, that was Ford, Man from the Alamo.
What is that terror there?
Terror in a Texas town. A Swedish whaler is out for revenge.
That's it. When he finds out that
a greedy oil man murdered his father on their land.
Terror in a Texas Town, 1958, with Sterling Hayden. Who wrote that? Let's check that out.
And that is a actually it's Dalton a very Trumbo enjoyable little
well the
Western.
Dalton Trumbo gang. Yeah. That's not exactly a pygmy.
No, and it's very enjoyable. Actually, it's a delightful little. Hour and a half.
So
whatever.
Just you stay tuned to this show and you find out all kinds of useful Western trivia.
Stuff you can't live without.
Well, that's and you right. can probably find them on YouTube as well to watch either on whatever player you might have or a computer. And
Sebastian Cabot's in this thing,
I
too.
Know. Isn't that funny?
I can't remember who the bad guy was, but he did a good job, too. Yeah.
Sven Hansen. Let's see who's in the no, I'm not recognizing any of the vet players.
You know, he might be an interesting topic sometime.
What?
Hayden.
Sterling? Well, you know, he spent some time here.
Yeah.
Because he outlived the Duke by almost a decade, and he and the Duke had some stuff here at one point, if I remember correctly, and I forget who owned the soundstage. But I'm not sure Hayden didn't have a piece of that.
Well, you
he
know, ever read that biography of his? I can't name it after his boat, where he walked away from Hollywood, lived on the boat for about 10 years, and just sailed around the world?
No. No, I don't remember that one.
Great story.
Well, okay. We got about 2.5 minutes. We got to talk about, we'll be talking more about the Savoy Opera House thing from the Empire Ranch. And, Oh, what else are we going to be doing? I don't know if we're going to do another art show this year or not. We may. We may put it someplace.
Well, the trail
art's
coming up in March.
Hey, wait a minute. I don't need a percher on anymore.
Oh, yeah.
You see the thing they handed me on last time? I thought it was an elephant.
Yeah.
It had to be, you know, they had to hoist, pick me up and drop me.
You need one of those, what do they call them, padrums or whatever it was, you know?
Well, I was kind of, it was a bit pudgy that time. It was about 2012. Yeah, I was.
Nobody was.
He's Dreyfus's stool.
Well, no, I do remember this much. I remember seeing one picture, and it was a Sal Reichert picture, and she sent it up after we were down there in 2012 for some election thing for Carol. And I looked at that thing, and I said, oh, who's that? Didn't he play in Godfather 3? And I went, oh, it's me.
Jackie Gleason.
I was at 250.
Wow.
170. Huh? Yeah. I could actually ride a real horse.
You're svelte.
Here's Danny. We got about a minute and a half, Danny.
Hey, this will. I really enjoy your show. I wanted to mention a little trivia about Dennis Weaver. I knew Dennis's brother, Cliff Weaver, and actually he drove my wife and I in his horse and carriage to our wedding, outdoor wedding in Mesilla, New Mexico.
All right.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and a great guy, Cliff Weaver. He's passed away now, but... he was a massage therapist, had a practice there just south of Las Cruces.
Well, that's that's Bunker's territory, basically.
Is it?
Yeah, Ruidosa, actually.
Yeah, well, Ruidosa.
Lincoln County. That's a little west and south, but yeah.
Yeah, Ruidosa was east of
Las
Cruces and up in the mountains. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But just thought I'd share that.
Well, I appreciate it, Danny. Thank you. That's a good message. The people who knew Dennis Weaver said he was actually a pretty nice guy, which is, that doesn't get said by a lot, not everybody that works in a movie. In case Bunker could check in with you on that.
I got
one.
To work with him on Do It Diablo, and he was very popular with the folks in Kanab, you know, cause that's where we shot. And they really liked him, took him to heart, and I think some of them took him to dinner and stuff like that. But, you know, a very nice man.
Yeah, a lot of those guys are, believe it or not. At least they used to be. I don't know about now. Can't speak for it. All right, we're out of time. Thank you, Bunker.
Thank you.
That was a great hour.
Thanks for listening to Voices of the West.